Shameless Media.
This episode of the Shameless Book Club is brought to you by Cetaphil and their range of dermatologist-tested products to suit everyone. Hello and welcome to the April installment of The Adaptation. Today we are reviewing the miniseries Apples Never Fall. The book behind the TV show was published in September 2021 to moderately positive reviews. Now the story of matriarch Joy Delaney going missing and her four adult kids being left to piece together everything they thought they knew about their parents is streaming on Binge. And the end product is slightly divisive. My name is Michelle Andrews. Today I am joined by the wonderful Managing Director of Shameless Media, Ange Kalouf. Hello, Ange.
Hello.
And our Partnerships Manager, Cassie Bartle.
Hello.
Hi. How are we feeling, guys?
Good. I'm so excited to have this chat.
I'm excited. We've had a few chatters in the office and I know that there's some mixed feelings.
I feel like we all love each other. We do not all agree with each other on this particular subject. Shall we dive into the Australian connections? Obviously, Leanne Moriarty is Australian, but there is another Australian connection to this adaptation, Cassie.
Well, it was filmed in Queensland, so it was partially funded by the Australian government and also the Queensland government, all about, you know, bringing international productions to our shores. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was also based upon Leanne Moriarty's book, Apples Never Fall. She's had a few adaptations now, which, interesting.
They haven't all hit. Obviously, we had Big Little Lies first, and that was a runaway success. People were essentially saying when that came out a few years ago, or more than a few years ago now, people were saying, this is a new era of television. And yet everything since then has been a slight flop.
Yes, but I mean, I think it lies with the production company.
Yep.
Because the first one was HBO, which is the creme de la creme of TV series.
Gave us Sex and the City, of course it is.
Yes. And Peacock is the production company or distributor for this one, I believe. And
I think it was Hulu for Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
They've all been really different.
And they've all just been going down.
Now, Ange, have you read Apples Never Fall, the book?
No. That's the point, right? Don't have to read the book.
No.
I did read Big Little Lies and Nine Perfect Strangers, and I actually loved both of those books a lot.
I have read almost every Leanne Moriarty book. This book was my least favourite. It is the only one I did not finish back when it was published in 2021. Apples Never Fall is also Leanne's most recent book. She hasn't released anything in years now. She was very prolific in the 2010s. Her big titles are, of course, Big Little Lies, which we just mentioned, Truly Madly Guilty, The Husband's Secret, and Nine Perfect Strangers. This adaptation got underway a few years ago. The show was originally ordered at Peacock in February of 2022. A little over a year ago, we learned about the cast, and it's a pretty good cast as well. So I think expectations were high. Leanne herself is an exec producer on the show. Melanie Marnich, who's best known for the miniseries Expats, was tasked with developing this story for the screen. It filmed last year, as you said, Cassie, in Queensland, but also some scenes were filmed in London, England, which took me by surprise. And I can't figure out why. Or which scenes?
That's so surprising. I had no idea.
Why wouldn't, if you needed a cityscape, wouldn't you just pop over to Sydney or Melbourne? Why was it done in London?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe one of the actors had to be over there, I'm suspecting.
Yeah.
How bizarre.
I don't know. Also importantly, and I want to stress this for our listeners, according to some reports I read, the filming and production of this show was directly affected by the 2023 SAG-AFTRA strikes. It was very on again, off again. It sounds like they had some issues when it came to those strikes. And perhaps that was not all that surprising when you watched it back. Not for me anyway. The New York Times review read, "So well-oiled and unsurprising, it just glides on by. If Apples Never Fall were just a domestic drama, that would probably be enough to sustain a story. But the show is also a missing person mystery that is nowhere near as mysterious as it seems to think it is." Ange, do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. I have so many feelings that agree with that. I do.
Cassie?
There's no mystery.
Yes. Yes. There's not a lot of... Yeah, sans mystery. But I guess one thing I forgot to mention at the start is I have read the book, but I did enjoy the book, and I feel like the book has a lot more depth and backstory, which I guess that's what happens when you do a TV adaptation. You sort of lose a lot of things. There's a few things on the cutting room floor, and I think they needed to go back to the cutting room and get a few things back out.
Now, it also got a negative review from Time Magazine. Their review read, "Even Hulu's silly adaptation of Moriarty's Nine Perfect Strangers is substantially better than this. Considering the personnel involved, it's hard to tell why the show went so frustratingly wrong. This show has a 46% approval on Rotten Tomatoes. I can't wait to see where we fall when we give our ratings at the end of the ep. But before we get there, we are starting with casting. Cassie, kick us off. What was your favourite casting decision?
Love's a strong word. Jake Lacey.
Same.
Huge fan of him. I've seen him in a few things now, obviously most recently The White Lotus. I really enjoyed his performance. I think you can really tell he's a very seasoned actor, and I very much liked his character arc throughout the whole series as well.
He played, of course, the philandering, troublesome son, Troy.
Yes. Mm. Probably should have said that as well.
That's
sorry.
Okay. That's what I'm here for. And what did you think of Jake Lacey as Troy?
I think he did a good job, but I don't think that's why I didn't like him. I think there was just way too much drama attached to one character. It was just a lot. I felt like there were just so many things. And then the whole affair, and I see why they would have put the affair with his boss's wife into the story, because they obviously wanted to demonstrate the apple's not falling, and then there was an affair in their family, in their parents' marriage, and therefore that's why it might have been in there. I just felt like it was all a bit too far and a bit too silly, and really I didn't like it. I like him as an actor. I didn't like this character that he played at all.
He was one of the few characters I did like. I had two casting choices that I liked. I have written down Jake Lacey as Troy. The other one I had written down was Annette Bening as Joy Delaney. Joy Delaney, if anyone was going to save this story, it was Annette Bening as Joy Delaney for me. I kept writing down in my notes, this woman is a good actress. And I felt like she did the most with the material that was given to her. Not knocking the other actors, I think they were all ultimately maybe sabotaged by the script writing that they were given. But I really liked Annette Bening as Joy Delaney. Where did we land with her?
I loved her too.
No, I loved her as well. I thought she was very believable.
I do too. I did find it quite predictable. I think that whole character that she played just was super predictable. The overbearing mother, lost in her newfound empty nest syndrome and retirement. And I guess I also found it quite jarring then when she took a drifter in and then ran away from home with said drifter. But because I love her as an actor, I did adore the character.
That's fair. Sticking to casting, what other casting decisions did we love or hate? I have a hate, if I'm allowed to present it to the team.
Go for it.
The character of Amy Delaney being played by Alison Brie. Now, I like Alison Brie. I think she's such a talented actress. If anything, though, she was so talented for me that when she first played Trudy Campbell in Mad Men, 2 decades ago almost now, she was so good at playing that really annoying, grating wife. I almost cannot see her in any other role. And now it's like that annoyance factor has dragged through for her for me. When I see her, I'm instantly annoyed because I used to hate the character of Trudy Campbell so much, which was like she was so good at playing Trudy Campbell in Mad Men. But now when I see Alison Brie, I'm like, I still can't forget that. And you're playing Amy Delaney, and Amy Delaney is fucking infuriating. Like, this woman is so, so frustrating in so many ways. I wonder if Alison Brie is suffering by playing so many annoying characters over and over again. Where did we land on this?
I just felt like she was just in this like character costume. They put her in the maxi dress and the bangles, and I was those tatters are fake. Like, and all of a sudden she's a hippie, and
she's having a peace ceremony instead of a search party.
The peace ceremony.
Is that what it was called? I think that's what it was.
Such but it was such a caricature.
That's exactly what it was, and I didn't like it.
No. Who did we like? Anyone else? Or more negativity from us?
It was more negativity for me. I actually feel a bit embarrassed for both Sam Neill and Annette Bening. Oh. I think Stan and Joy, Look, don't get me wrong. I guess when they took on this role and these roles, it probably looked really good on paper. I don't think it delivered, though.
I know that this was the point, but he was just very grumpy the whole time. And it's like, are we supposed to be rooting for you or not?
Like, do we like you?
It was weird.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it was just, again, kind of underdeveloped maybe, but I just feel like there was more to him that we never got to see. He was just this grumpy old volatile dad.
Yeah, and also in the book as well, there was a lot of backstory as to why he did certain things. Like, for example, you know how he cleaned the car? And they were like, why'd you do that? The reason I'm pretty sure he did it in the book was because he said, oh, she was nagging me to do it the whole time, so I did it, because I think that was his way of coping
showing
with her
even.
Not being there. He's like, I'm going to do all the things she asked me to do so that when she comes back, she's going to like love me again.
See, that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why did they leave that out?
Oh, exactly. Go back to the cutting room floor and get it.
Yeah, exactly. I think the issue for me is that the characters actually made me feel less like, oh my God, I need to know what's happened, and more like, how silly are they or me?
Yeah. I think that's a huge one. I actually didn't really care about any of them. I also, as soon as the show began, if we're talking about casting, I do think if you're casting a family, the family needs to look on some level like a family. These siblings, I was like, when are we going to get the plot line that they're all from different dads?
That's
like,
so funny. In my notes, I've literally got, were we supposed to think they were a blended family?
Yes. I was like, this affair she had is one of them the offspring of that? Because none of these kids have the same DNA.
No.
These actors look like they're all white, but it ends there, the similarities.
No, 100%. And I think also maybe they all had different acting styles, and sort of matching that dynamic, they just couldn't portray that on screen. And I mean, I was trying to think of other shows like Succession. I know that, again, that's a creme de la creme show, but that's, I don't think the siblings in Succession look the same, but the way that they portrayed that sibling dynamic was so believable, whereas in this, they're all kind of just a bit disjointed.
You're so right. They don't look like siblings in Succession, and I never thought that for a second as if that was an issue.
No.
You're so right. It comes down to the chemistry as actors as
that's
well.
That's spot on.
Yeah.
Because it felt like, you know that the scene when they listen to the audio and then they run out, and it's Brooke, I think, she makes the realization that dad's done it. It was just so phony.
Yeah.
Like, but that piece of audio would have been hard to listen to with your siblings about your father and your mum. And what, they weren't supporting each other the way you'd expect them to. They just weren't, they were just like four actors that had never really known each other hanging around trying to pretend.
And maybe that stems back to the strike. And they were sort of losing their flow. Like maybe they stopped and then they came back and they just couldn't.
They couldn't gel. There was something about this. It was one of those cases where you're like, you can't fully put your finger on it, but something's not quite meshing. It's like when you make dinner and you're trying to make a sauce and things aren't quite gelling in the way you saw it and everything's starting to separate. You're like, what the fuck is going wrong here? Like watching this, I was just like, this isn't clicking the way it should. Like every ingredient in this recipe seems good. Leanne Moriarty, good. The cast, good. A producer who has experience on expats, good. Mm-hmm. And yet you put it all together and you end up with this like jumbled mess of what the fuck is this? Can we talk about the casting of Savannah? She's the other main character we haven't even really mentioned yet. Savannah was played by, who has the name written down? Cassie?
Georgia Flood.
Georgia Flood. Mm-hmm. What did we think?
I liked her. Mm. I didn't like her in the book, but I felt like in the adaptation, she had a bit more of a grittier role. She was really annoying in the book, and she's also annoying in the show. Mm. But less annoying, if that's a thing.
She's actually an Australian actress.
Yes,
as well.
I believe this is one of her breakout roles.
Yes.
This is her sort of making her way into the Hollywood world of things, I guess.
Yeah. I think if she was given a better script, I would have found her believable. Actually, I think she was one of the stronger actors in this, for me anyway.
Yeah, I think she was too. I don't think she did a bad job of acting that role of con, you know, or the con artist. Does she sleep with Brooke in the book?
No.
Doesn't she?
No, well, Brooke has a husband in the book.
So
it's very different.
Because that was dumb.
That was really silly. Another silly bit where it's like, what's the point?
Her backstory in the book is a lot stronger.
Okay.
It all comes to light in a very different way as well.
Okay.
I don't know if we want to get into this now.
Can you tell us now?
Yeah, it's now. Can
we talk about this? When we do a follow-up episode on Apples Never Fall. Sorry.
Actually feel like now I need to read the book.
Yeah. So in the book, the family all find out together that she's the sister and they confront her before she leaves. So, and Joy knows as well. When Joy goes away with Savannah, she knows, you know, obviously what's happened, but she also tells the whole family where she's going and writes a note and puts it on the fridge.
Oh.
And then it falls off and the dog eats the piece of paper and that's why they never know where she went.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
So they sort of have a bit of a reconciliation with her. And then it's very random. She goes on this like cancer retreat off grid with Savannah to just like calm down. And she tells Stanch, like, I know I've had a really big fight, but I'm just going away with Savannah, the con artist. And I'll see you in 21 days.
Who I also know is Harry Haddad's sister.
Yes.
Right. All of that adds up to tell me why I didn't read the book or finish reading the book back in 2021. So Brooke had a husband? Was that what you were saying?
Brooke had a husband and she has been separated from him for a while. I think it's like almost 5 to 10 years, I'm pretty sure.
And Brooke and Savannah don't sleep together?
No, no.
Because what was the point of that? Was that more just infidelity, apples not falling far, mum had an affair, daughter does it, son did it?
Yeah. I read an article just saying that was a little bit of spice added.
I don't think I needed more spice. I think I needed more sense. Guys, after the break, we're going to talk about my favourite part, strengths and weaknesses. But first, a word from today's sponsor.
You guys know that between work, family and everything else we juggle, life can get pretty hectic. Taking care of our skin often takes a backseat. But Cetaphil is here to change the game. They make skincare effortless. Having worked with dermatologists for over 75 years, Cetaphil offers gentle yet effective products for all skin types, including the most sensitive. They have definitely lived up to their philosophy. We do skin, you do you, with Cetaphil. You know that they've got your back when it comes to skincare, which means I can do more of what I love freely. If you're ready to achieve healthier and happier skin with ease and not let your skin get in the way of living your best life, it's time to try Cetaphil. Shop their entire range online or in-store at Chemist Warehouse.
All right, my ladies, strengths and weaknesses. Let's start with the good and then we'll transition to the bad. Cassie, you've given me the impression that you saw a bit of good in this series.
Yes.
What did you see?
I enjoyed the setup of each episode being from a different character's perspective. Mm-hmm. I think it helped you sort of follow along and go through that process of elimination of it being, oh, well, it can't be that person because X, Y, Z. I thought it made the pace very strong and, yeah, each episode you're like, oh, okay, we're doing the hippie sibling this time. So strap in, let's go. So, yeah, I enjoyed that setup. It wasn't done like that in the book as well, so it was a little bit different. But then, I mean, do we want to talk about weaknesses as well?
Yeah, why not?
Well, a weakness was within that you had the then and the now.
I felt quite confused sometimes.
Oh, I felt really confused.
The jumping back and forth.
Well, not even confused. I felt just like tired, I guess.
Yeah, I did struggle with it.
What about you, Ange? Another strength?
A couple of things. I do love a twist.
Mm.
And the show gave me a bit of a twist.
Okay. What was the twist? The Savannah bit.
She wasn't dead.
Yeah, okay.
She wasn't dead. I kind of thought
that would happen the whole time, though.
Maybe halfway through. And look, to be honest, it took me a long time to watch. So I don't think I got the flow of watching it all on my
Fair enough. I think
the patience of getting to the end, I was like, okay, there was a little twist in there and that was all right.
Like we had a little sugar hit
there. There was just a little bit of something that made me go, okay, it was worth it. Was it really? I don't know.
I have a strength and unfortunately my strength, Ange, was one of your weaknesses earlier in the episode. I really liked the Troy storylines. I actually really liked the affair with the boss's wife. I also really enjoyed the storyline about giving his ex-wife full access to use their embryos. I found that to be a very unique storyline. I thought it was quite compelling. I also thought it was good character development.
I think that at the very end was really beautiful. I do agree with that one. And I liked that thread coming through.
And he's also the reason why there was that huge amount of tension between Joy and Stan because of Stan hitting him when he was playing with Harry.
The Harry her dad storyline in its entirety was just so weak to me. Not only did I not really give a shit about Harry her dad, the idea that his sister Savannah would exact revenge on Joy decades after her, or like at least a decade after her family disbanded, was so stupid. Like, how was Joy to blame for any of it? And how was this good revenge? It didn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense. There were also so many plot holes. Why would an intelligent man like Stan Delaney lie about the scratch on his face when he knows he's being investigated? Who ended the audio recording? Like, the police all go, and as a podcaster, I feel like this is my area of expertise. If there was to be a murder trial and podcast recording is involved, I am testifying. I'm here as an expert. How the hell does this make sense? So the idea in the TV show is he's into podcasting about tennis.
Yep.
He's doing a segment on why more people should take doubles matches seriously. He gets into a fight with his wife, Joy. They have a bit of a scuffle. He kind of trashes the room but doesn't assault her. But then an audio recording is found by the police later and is used to throw him behind bars, charged with first-degree murder, looking at a potential life sentence or the death penalty. As a podcaster, who stopped the recording? Like, on the Zoom, the literal thing he was using to do podcasting, we've used that here, right? It says, like, the time up on the little Zoom. You can see the recording time. You have to stop the recording at some point. It's very obviously on. He would have had to have stopped it. I mean, he didn't realize his wife was missing for another, what, maybe 24 hours when she never came home. So what, he stopped that recording and then filed away that recording somewhere for the police to find it later? Once it was like a 7-hour MP3, he would have known. Like, none of that made sense in any lifetime to me. And it was so weak. So weak.
Yeah. It really was. It was so silly. I actually had the same thought, and I'm not an expert podcaster, but it did cross my mind. I was like, hang on, how did they get there? What else was on there?
Yeah. So we're talking about a professional mic, right? The mic is picking up sounds of, you know, the bookshelves, the whatever being trashed. You hear his footsteps walk away. Joy was still in the room at that point when, you know, the police audio recording cut out. The mic would have picked up her shoes and her footsteps walking away.
Yeah.
So anyone with any fucking detective nous or who's trained in audio would go, okay, so that's his footsteps. You then hear her footsteps. So not dead, not murdered.
Not being dragged in a body bag.
Yeah. You don't hear, you wouldn't hear any of that. You would have heard her leave the home, close the door behind her, whatever. No. I don't know. My other weakness, if I can have another one, what else have I got down here? The kids, when their mum disappears, it's kind of like I'm watching amateur detectives in a kids show be like, we're on a fun little project. We're hunting for mum. Like the first episode, they're walking through a museum or some shit, or maybe it was the second episode.
Yeah.
I was watching it being like, why are they talking about their missing mother? Like it's this quirky little thing that's happened to them recently. Instead of being like the progression of, oh, this is strange and a bit odd for mum to like, oh dear, we're looking at a potential murder of our mother by our father. It happened way too slowly and there was never really a penny drop moment to be like, oh, fuck, this is quite the definition of serious.
There really wasn't. I literally wrote down, why did this family treat their mother's disappearance like a game of Cluedo? Like it did. It felt like, you're right. And the security guard was like, shh, or something in that scene. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was something very odd. And I was like, this is
I can't remember
bizarre.
This scene. When was it?
Early on. It was very early on. I think they tried to make this show funny. There were different interactions that were an attempt at humour, which just fell down. Can I play a snippet to the listeners of the helium balloon scene, which I really hated?
And moving to Seattle.
Sorry, what?
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 Logan, what? Logan.
Claire wants the embryo she made with Troy to make a baby with her new boyfriend.
She wants your babies? How ugly is this boyfriend?
I
just aced my love language midterm.
Examples like that. Just like, so grating, so annoying, hated it. Did you find that annoying as well, Ange?
100%. I found it so annoying. Look, I'm not expecting a TV show to ever, or any kind of show or movie to be realistic, because that's not entertaining. But this honestly felt like a bit of a spoof. Mm. And it was a bit of a spoof of kind of serious subject matter. And I didn't like that at all. It was weird.
Cassie, do you agree?
Yeah, well, I didn't like the helium balloon, okay. But the one bit in that scene is I liked Troy, coming back to our boy.
Mm-hmm.
The one comedic bit where I laughed was when they discovered that the dad had had like a heart attack or something, or like a heart trouble at Wimbledon. And then the one thing I thought was funny when Troy's like, but did you go to the quarterfinals? Because I got those tickets for you. Like, I could see that would be my brother. Sorry to throw him under the bus. But he'd so be like, I paid for those tickets. Yeah. Like, what's the deal? I thought that bit was funny.
Yeah,
that bit saved that scene.
Yep.
Yeah. I just don't know any adult family who would sit around with helium balloons.
No.
No, I don't think so either. Do we have any other strengths or weaknesses we want to talk about?
I have so many weaknesses, but I think we've kind of covered a few.
I wish the listeners could see the length of Andrew's notes for weaknesses.
I was like, oh my God.
She actually, you've put it under bad, and then you have like maybe 30 dot points.
Look, I think it was just really shallow. It lacked for me any kind of deep dive into the Delaney's, and that's where I think I didn't connect with it and the story fell over. It just seemed really generic, and it was trying to lean into crime, but it was just family drama about a middle-class family who have secrets. And I kept thinking that it seemed really familiar, and it wasn't until I read a review today on Pajiba.com that called it a fake out, which was actually so spot on. It basically said, Apples Never Fall was set up like a family murder mystery, but spoiler alert, there is no murder mystery at all. There's something in that review talked to the fact that, because I was like, oh, hang on, what are all the, why is this so familiar? Why am I feel like I've seen this all before quite a few times. So I was like, this seems like something I've watched and read. And that's when I made that connection back to Big Little Lies. And then I was like, oh, hang on, that was by Leanne Moriarty, because I hadn't drawn that connection when I was watching. And then I was like, oh, it's definitely like Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
And it just feels a bit same. Like it just wasn't interesting enough. It feels like it's a bit done now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why I have so many weaknesses, because I'm like, oh, boring.
My one weakness, well, no, I had a few weaknesses, but I really enjoyed it up until the last episode. I felt like the last episode fell really flat, and
really?
I felt like they were trying, it was like a poor man's Gone Girl.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've seen Gone Girl, where you're like, oh, she can't be dead, and then all of a sudden she's not dead, and then you hear the backstory. I feel like that's what they tried to do, but it just fell a bit flat when Savannah at the end of the second last episode walked in. She's like, oh, hi, and she's having her wine, and you're like, oh. Oh, yeah, of course.
You're so right. Yeah. There that's is an air so of Gone Girl.
Yeah, I think that's such a good
comparison.
Yeah, and the ending for me was a huge weakness. And I'm sorry that I keep being like, I read the book. But in the book, the ending was a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And it just fell so flat for me. Like, for example, the reason why she went away was a lot clearer.
Mm.
Whereas this, I didn't find it believable that this mum who was so obsessed with her children was just like,
fuck you guys.
Yeah, I'm leaving.
And like, I think there's a line where she's like, I want them to miss me for once, or worry about me for once.
Also, when she gets back, sorry, massive weakness from me. When she gets back, after like 11 days missing, being in the headlines, having her husband locked up for murder, and the kids are standing in the kitchen being like, Mum, this was like kind of bad.
Oh, yes.
Like, what do you mean you have to have that explained to you? Like, that was the most bizarre thing to watch. I'm like, has this woman not, I know that you didn't have your phone for a little bit.
No.
Surely after 11 days being off the face of the earth, the average discerning adult starts to think, maybe the police have been contacted. Maybe there's an investigation into my whereabouts. And then I'm making news. I'm a huge story. My husband's been accused of being a murderer. And I have completely taken, like, I want them to miss me for once, about 10,000 steps too far.
Yeah. And she's doing karaoke in the local pub.
Oh. Before we get to maybe standout scenes or scenes we wanted to unpack specifically, I want to play a snippet of Joy Delaney speaking about the plight of being a mother.
Here's the thing no one tells you about marriage, about family. How much you can resent the people you love, for everything you had to give up for them, and there's never even a thank you. You just give it all up because that's what having a family demands of a woman. And then you wake up one day and you realize the person that you were meant to be is gone. You gave her up for people who don't even see you. And there's no time to grieve her because there's too much damn laundry.
That scene for me as well, it was like halfway caught between this is really good and refreshing and bang on. And also I feel like I've seen this monologue done in so many other formats in better ways now. Mm-hmm. It felt very, I know the book came out in 2021. That monologue felt very 2017-esque to me.
I liked it. I was like, oh, this is good. Mm. Yes. Not the mother and me sitting there going, I can see why she would feel that way after 30 years.
Yeah.
But then you're right. It's like, just that repetitiveness though, Mish. It feels like these sorts of scenes have been done many times before.
Yeah, and in the context of this is why I've now made myself be missing for 11 days. I'm like, that you're making great points, Joy. I agree. That's all really fucking shit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really explain why you are now in the wilderness with Savannah. And you don't really seem to have any real alarm about that.
This absolute con artist and no one you love, who you apparently, like, seemingly love so much, knows where on earth you are. You're not concerned by them being worried about you or, like, any of these things when they all clearly showed quite a bit of concern around Savannah. It doesn't make sense.
No,
you're, like,
no.
torturing your family. It's just ridiculous.
No. Can I point out one other scene that I really enjoyed? Well, not enjoyed, but I think I finally got into it and, like, had a bit of stress.
Yeah.
Was the morgue scene when they went to go identify, they thought they were maybe identifying Joy's body, and Amy and the dad go in, and I was actually quite confused by that bit because they saw a ring and they were all like, and then they walked out and there was this huge amount of, oh my God, is she, and then Amy goes, oh, and they're like, oh God, she's dead. And then she's like, no, she's not dead. I'm just relieved. And they're like, oh, Amy, you're so annoying. Yeah. You always do this. And I felt that frustration for the siblings and I turned to my husband and I was watching. I was like, Amy is so annoying. And that was one scene where I thought they got the dynamic right. Like, you could tell that's like, she always does this in these situations. She makes it about her and she's the dramatic one.
Do you think the dad, okay, I hear you. I agree. Amy's so annoying in that scenario. Realistically, wasn't the dad in the morgue with her, like looking at the body? You open the door and you go, guys, it's not her.
Yeah.
No, there's no reality where it unfolds that way, where for 10 seconds they're looking at Amy crying and the dad's just standing there like a fucking doofus.
Yeah.
Not saying, guys, it's not your mum. It wasn't your mum's body.
Nothing to worry about, kids. Oh, like, it's not mum. Thank goodness. No. It's not mum. Mm. It was silly.
It was silly. So much of this show was silly. Which brings us to the final question. What did we rate it out of 5? Cassie. Chuck us your rating.
I will chuck you a 3.5.
A 3.5. Cool.
I think the book got me there. You know, the book gave me a bit more of what I needed, the backstory. So, yeah, but if I hadn't have read the book, I'd probably be on your side.
Okay. Ange?
I really didn't enjoy it, guys. I gave it a 1.
Oh, Ange.
But I honestly, but I think you telling me about the book filled in some gaps.
Sorry.
So I can see where you got to, Cassie, but I have to disagree with you on this one. Like, it's a hard one for me.
I will see your 1 and raise you a 1.5. I really, really didn't like it. There is no universe where I would have finished this show if it weren't out of duty to our beloved Shameless Book Club listeners. I did this for you guys. If you're listening to this and I'm in your ear holes right now, I did it for you and I did it under great duress. I was miserable last night finishing this show. It was painful. I need to also fess up because we're a place of honesty here. I did fast forward half of episode 6 because I was like, this is just so bad. This show is so bad. Sorry to the cast. I feel like it's not your fault. Not sorry to whoever wrote the script. It might be your fault.
Such a different experience. But I had to watch it for this as well. And I had to go ahead because I couldn't wait for my husband anymore. And he got angry. He's like, why are you watching it without me? This is our show. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like,
but this is the thing, Cassie. Sam loving it is indicative and representative of the reviews. There are positive reviews for this. If you're listening to this and you loved it, that's great. Cassie gave it a 7 out of 10, kind of. So, like, I think both are totally valid. It just was not for me.
Yeah, no. Nor me.
No,
clearly. Yeah. So and fun. I'll watch almost anything.
I love that Ange keeps digging the knife in. She's like, not only did I give it a 1, I give everything else at least a 3. Guys, thank you for joining me on this month's adaptation. How did you find your first? It's both of your first adaptation episodes, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Loved the episode.
Hated the TV
Hated
show.
Hated the watching, but I will be back for more.
That's come across. We did get this.
I honestly am just like such a lover of most things, but I struggled. I got a migraine the day after I finished it, guys.
Making like, her sick. She hated it so much it made her sick. Cassie, are you ever going to come back to the adaptation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's great here. Honestly, I don't know what your issue is.
Well, maybe the next month we'll have you on, guys, because next month for May, we are reviewing the Amazon original The Idea of You, based on the acclaimed contemporary love story of the same name. The Idea of You centers on a 40-year-old single mum, played by Anne Hathaway, who begins an unexpected romance with a 24-year-old lead singer of the band August Moon, which is the hottest boy band on the planet. As I just said, it stars Anne Hathaway. It's on Amazon Prime. I feel like this is going to be such a pop culture moment. We will review it. Make sure you keep an eye out on the feed. We are actually doing a little bonus adaptation in May. You guys are loving this series so much. You're getting 2 next month. So we will see you then. In the meantime, make sure you follow the Shameless Book Club over on socials. We're on TikTok. We're on Instagram. We would love to have you. Until then, we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.